Uncensored, no holds barred talk. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This is the Global Reality Radio Network.
Gentlemen, welcome to another live edition of the Global Reality right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. And we are live here with you tonight, Tuesday now going into Wednesday. I got a lot of email messages yesterday and saw people in the chat room, which indicates to me how many people we have now that are listening in the listening audience that are outside of the continental United States. For those of you that are outside the continental United States, I think that's who these people were. Well, I can tell by the emails and the chatters. The 4th of July, July 4th, is every year in the United States of America. It's what they call Independence Day, which is totally ironic because everybody's running around thinking they're free and nobody's really free. And it's a tribal ritual and it's something we all take place in. And everybody kind of, you know, regardless of what you believe, what your beliefs are and stuff, everybody pretty much takes a part in it. It's kind of like Christmas or anything else because everybody's off of work and, you know, everybody parties and gets together and it's a good time to do that. And for me, considering that, well, I guess it's now officially my birthday, isn't it? We're now into the July 6th, from the 5th to the 6th. So now, yeah, we're officially, it is my birthday. So happy birthday to me and thanks to all the people in the chat room who told me happy birthday tonight. But yeah, so generally on the 4th of July, that for me, that's kind of when I have to, you know, if I'm going to hang out and party with people, that's kind of when I have to do it because by the time you get to, you know, July 6th on my birthday, everybody's partied out from 4th of July. Oh, I don't want to party, blah, blah, you know. But nonetheless, that's why I was on the air yesterday. So those, just for future reference, I know I had a lot of people go, well, how come it's Monday? How come there's not a show today? It's just, you know, it was a holiday here. So that's why there was no show. But thanks to everybody for tuning in and being with us here tonight. We've got a big bunch of news that I'm going to try to get through as fast as possible tonight. And then we're going to continue reading the Lost Book of Enki as translated by Zachariah Sitchin. Again, not because I endorse it or anything else, but because it's good learning material. It allows us to sift through the bullshit and find out what's what and what's not. And I think we certainly have been doing that here. So thanks to everybody who's been tuning in tonight. My website where this broadcast originates from is www.theglobalreality.com. It's www.theglobalreality.com. That's where this broadcast originates from. You can find the listen link there to listen to the show and you can also find the chat room. You can find the chipping banner, the donate button there, where you can donate to our work or send a birthday gift to me or whatever you want to do there. I had some, I've had requests for this for years. I've never really been able to do it, but I think I'm going to go tomorrow and see about getting a post office box. I've had a lot of requests from people that want to send in support or want to send in donations or whatever, but for whatever reason, they either don't like to do the stuff electronic. What it is that a lot of people believe that, you know, if they make a PayPal donation or something to me, that it's tracked through the government and blah, 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 and they're afraid that, you know, people are going to see that they're giving a donation to me. Well, I mean, you know, regardless of that, they know everything you do, man. I got over that a long time ago, you know, because that's just where it's at. I mean, you know, it's always good to take precautions. It's always good to, you know, do whatever you can to stay off their radar at all times. Absolutely. So in the best interest of that, I understand some people like, you know, to not do PayPal stuff, but that's pretty much how we do it. But we're going to try to get a P.O. box going, so hopefully we'll have that up tomorrow. I've had a lot of requests for that. A lot of people want to be able to send checks or whatever else there. So we're going to try to get that going, and hopefully that'll help us maybe get some other people out there who have wanted to support us but don't like or cannot do it through the PayPal method and all of that. So we're going to get that going hopefully tomorrow. So, and also tomorrow, or today rather, on my birthday at noon, I'm going to be taping my 2-hour interview for Red Ice Radio. Again, I said thanks last week, but again, thanks to everybody out there over the past couple of years. All the listeners have incessantly sent emails over the past couple of years to Red Ice Radio asking them to have me on, and they never have. And I guess finally, I think the word's gotten out a bit on the CMP stuff, and I think they're curious probably more than anything to hear what I have to say. And I can't wait. I'm excited. I think Henrik Palmgren's done some good stuff over the show. I think one thing about his show that you can say is that he's one of those guys that, you know, he doesn't believe everything or everybody that comes on his show or on his broadcast or anything. He just, you know, because there's a lot of stuff that they let on that channel. Sometimes some of these guests, you're just like, oh my God, you know. But that's good, because then you get to see who's putting out verifiable info and who's putting out stuff that's just sheer disinfo. Then you get to decide for yourself who's who. So kind of having that open platform like that Red Eyes has enables you to be able to get a better idea of, you know, who the scam artists and the liars are and who's the people that are getting closer to really honestly putting forth the effort to look for the truth. Nobody's asking you to be 100% right all the time. Nobody's 100% right all the time. Nobody, not me, not anybody. And nobody's asking for that. That's not what it is. It just, the thing about it is that you're sticking to the real, you know, next level stuff. Not just getting distracted and stuck down at one level like the Truth Movement, Patriot Movement wants you to do. You know, but making that effort to push forward. So it should be a good show. I think we're going to talk a lot about the CMP. And I think we're probably going to get into a lot of that. Probably do a lot of that in the first hour, and then hopefully I'll try to get into deeper aspects with some of the stuff like we talked about with the gods of Eden, and maybe go a little bit deeper than that into the bloodlines and show how that ties. It should be a good show. I love doing shows where I'm interviewed and they kind of let me run with it. It's always fun. So I don't know when that's going to air. I'll let you guys know here. They haven't told me when it's going to air, when it's going to debut, when it's going to be up to download. I know for sure that the first hour is free, and you have to be a subscriber to get the second hour. But I'll find a way to get that second hour, and we'll find a way to get the whole interview up on our website exclusively for our listeners. So we'll try to get that going. I just don't know when that's going to be yet. If you'd like to send in an email tonight, globalrealityshow@gmail.com. That's globalrealityshow@gmail.com. I'll do my best to get into it here for you on this late night Moonbat edition of the broadcast. Flap, 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 everybody out there. Thanks for staying up late with us. GlobalRealityShow@gmail.com. I'm trying to go through my stack here and see if I have any emails. Somebody was saying, hey, look at the similarities between the Necronomicon and the Kabbalah and John Dee and that kind of stuff. Yeah. Yeah, that's right on. The Necronomicon and the Kabbalah are very similar. You're definitely talking to entities. That's the thing, you got to be careful, man. People get into some of this stuff, and they get into channeling, they get into, you know, spirit world communication stuff, and you got to be very careful with that, because, you know, you may be thinking you're talking to a benevolent, you know, being that says, I'm just looking out for you, but there's no way to be able to discern that or be able to tell. You got to be very careful with that. But yeah, I am aware that what John Dee was into was, you know, summoning spirits and communicating with them and getting information from them. Yeah, that's 100% absolutely true. Let's see here. This is, can you please give me your take on the UN Agenda 21. This rewilding of the Midwest is happening. These storms are nuts. I'm far too cynical to think this is just old Mother Nature's fault. Anyway, just wanted your thoughts on this. By the way, do you have some cool jazz to play behind your readings of the Lost Book of Enki? That is some love making Sumerian text. Yeah, we last week it was some pornographic stuff, man. Just want to get down and kind of talk like this.
Oh yeah, baby. We're going to get down to the groovy time and read some Lost Book of Enki for you tonight down here by the fire. I hope you put on some lace and some lingerie and look nice. Nice and sexy. Oh yeah, the Lost Book of Enki, baby. It's great.
I mean, it's stuff was talking about, you know. Every other page was somebody was biting somebody's dick off or swallowing sperm. Gallons of it, apparently, and then, you know, Enlil and Enki are fucking, you know, they're banging their half-sister, and fucking Enlil bangs her and knocks her up, and she gives birth, and literally, like, as soon as she gets, I mean, her vagina hasn't even had time to heal, and Enki's whisking her away to, you know, Eden to, you know, to pound the penis into the pavement a little bit more. I mean, it's just sick stuff. So they're requesting smooth jazz. I'll try my best, man. I'm not making any promises on the smooth jazz. I'll see what I can do. yeah, the Agenda 21, you know, in my first film on the Council for National Policy, The Secret Right, Volume 1, there's some footage in that film of Larry Pratt. There's some footage in there of Phyllis Schlafly. Both of those were shot at a conference that we went to back in 2008 that, you know, I when I first heard about it, I thought it was like a CMP meeting, you know, disguising itself as this, because it was called Freedom 21, so it was an anti-Agenda 21 thing. But, you know, everybody that was there were all these, you know, CMP-connected people, Phyllis Schlafly, Larry Pratt, Jerome Corsi. I think Ron Paul was supposed to be there one day. Chuck Baldwin was there one day. There was, I mean, you know, I can't remember. There's just tons of those these CMPers there. And that's what it was all about. And yeah, you know, I've thought about that, especially with some of the nuclear reactors, you know, rising and these rivers rising, flooding out these towns. Yeah, I mean, it does seem that they are trying to rewild some of the Midwest and all this. The Agenda 21 thing to me is, I don't know. You know, it's one of those things where, yes, what they talk about is true. Yes, those things have been on the agenda of the UN, but that people have been talking about Agenda 21 for a very long time. So my hesitation is are we seeing these things come into fold or hearing more hype about they may come into the fold and they may happen? If we're seeing more of them than is more of this happening than is being talked about, then yes, it's a serious issue. But to me, it really plays into this whole idea. It just doesn't give you the whole story. For instance, at this conference that I mentioned, there was one of the John Birch Society lackeys. I can't remember who it was. I saw him talking to John Stattmiller later. He was up there, you know, standing up there saying that the Rockefellers are all Gaia worshipers and that they're behind bringing in global, you know, the global warming stuff and all this. And I'm sitting there going, well, buddy, you're representing a group, the John Birch Society, that got their funding from the Rockefellers. And you think that everybody here is too stupid to know that. I was insulted. So to me, that right there, it tells you the people that are pimping this are facetious and being very sneaky about their affiliations. It's kind of like this story here. Great piece of, kind of a good segue there. Great piece of CMP dirt. Today, let me find it. Yeah, this is from, I can't remember what. It showed on CNN. Actually, The Morning Joe is what it was on. Pat Buchanan says socialism is bringing down Western civilization. Amid a discussion on U.S. taxes on corporate aircraft, MSNBC's conservative pundit Pat Buchanan castigated opponents on Tuesday for suggesting the wealthy can pay more than the poor. Going a bit further, Buchanan also added that he believes socialism is bringing down Western civilization and that wealthy Americans should keep the tax breaks for their corporate jets. And what's funny about that, Buchanan, who we've covered extensively here on the broadcast and in the films, Accounts for National Policy member. We have the clip in from ABC News in the first volume where they, you know, Buchanan says he was Jesuit trained. The Jesuits taught him how to think. And then, of course, Alex Jones worked as a campaign staffer on the 1996 election campaign of Pat Buchanan for president. Yet again, another Jesuit connection. The funny thing about it is these groups of these guys, they're like Pat Buchanan and others are in on the Council for National Policy, get their marching orders direct from the Royal Institute of International Affairs and the Milner's Round Table and the group that has the Fabian Socialists. These guys are designed to be, you know, the dead horse, the constant dead horse. They're the goofballs, they're the clowns. That's what that is so important about the Council for National Policy and its formation. When they formed that group, they officially set that group up to make sure that no matter who you voted for on either side of the phony political spectrum, you got socialism. So that's why they're the crazy religious nuts and they're the warmongers. And that's why they go out of their way to make sure everybody knows that. And that's why these guys play into that role. Because, that's the key word. It's a role. They're playing the role of that. So to answer your question there, that's exactly what I think is going on with this, with all this UN Agenda 21 stuff. These guys are playing a role to be against this stuff so that anybody who opposes the Agenda 21 stuff or anything like that can be automatically lumped into the same category as Michelle Bachmann or any of these other new right-wing pundits, you see? Because now they've created this climate where if you put yourself on one side of a particular issue, you are automatically, by default, by that choice, associating yourself now in the eyes of the public as being associated with that particular party. I've had people, you know, my sister Jamie and I've had people, family members, different people like that who, because we would have certain ideas and viewpoints on things, thought that we were Republicans. You know, because that's how people think. Because they're not thinking about the issue and the implications of it because they're still thinking in that controlled two-party system mentality. So automatically, if you have a stance on something that's what the CMP guys are designed to do. That's why they assigned the goofball Alex Jones to the 9-11. That way, you know, they tried it with Michael Moore. It didn't stick. It didn't stick. So they had to go deeper for it to stick, and that's where Alex Jones came in. And where, you know, if you talk about 9-11 being an inside job, you talk about 9-11 not being what they told us it was, you talk about 9-11 truth, automatically, you must be an Alex Jones fan. See that? That's what they do. So their job is to take issues and things that the public feels strongly about and then put out a gatekeeper or a figurehead that is basically in charge and the figurehead of that particular issue. And then when anybody else in the general public comes up and brings that issue up, you're on the side of so-and-so over here, the figurehead of that idea. No, I'm my own person. What's right is right and what's wrong is wrong. But see, now we're in this world where automatically as soon as you put your idea out there, and that's what's interesting, when you learn that, you can tell when somebody is, what team they're playing for. For instance, like, we played some Megadeth here. They're one of my favorite bands, you know. And look, you know, if I didn't like every band or musician that I like because of their politics or if they were Jewish or something else of that nature, there would be nothing good to listen to. Because most of these guys are Jewish or most of them are, you know, they use secret society logos like, you know, Scarab Wing Disc stuff. And they use some of them like Steve Vai, just, you know, straight up Illuminati stuff. Steve Vai is straight up Lucifer, by the way. The guy was born on like 6660, and his middle name is Ciro, a.k.a. Sirius, and he's got all that stuff all over his, you know, I'll sing Eye in the Pyramids all over his guitar and stuff like that. But listen to this. This is an interview from Dave Mustaine from Israeli National Radio from 2005, and they ask him, did you have any kind of a Jewish upbringing? And Dave Mustaine says, no, I didn't. Although my mom was Jewish, I didn't have any Jewish upbringing. I know a little bit about it. I'm a Christian. I've learned a lot about the history of the country. When I came here for my vacation, I got to see a lot of the country that, you know, goys just don't see. I mean, for me to come here, come through here and be able to go and see some of the private stuff that you can only see with a military pass was fantastic for me. Now, listen to that. So, number one right there, he calls people goyim, which is basically the Jewish term, the Jewish way of calling a white person, excuse me for saying this, a nigger. That's what it is. It's a racial slur. And they can fucking try to play that card all day long and say, oh, it's not. It is. And they know it is. And that's a little Jew joke between them. They tell everybody it's not a racial slur. And then between them as Jews, because I've had friends and stuff that were Jewish before, and they've told me this stuff, you know. So I'm not making that up. I've known people that are Jews. They told me straight, oh, yeah, we call you, you know. And that used to be kind of a funny thing, you know. Some people call each other nigga or whatever, you know, just to play around. And I used to know a couple of Jewish guys, and they would, they'd be like, what's up, goy? You know, stuff like just, you know, fucking with you, you know, instead of saying that. It's just kind of a funny thing, but it's most definitely is that. And I just, you know, and then he's talking about going around Israel with some special military pass. And then, like I said before, you know, we hear Dave Mustaine talking about, I won't play with these bands because they use satanic imagery in their music. And then you look at his album Endgame. And right there, he even in his own words, if you listen to the interview he did with Alex Jones, where Alex Jones went to his concert and interviewed him, they're sitting there looking at the cover, and they say, oh, yeah, you've got the G there, and it's kind of in like a Stargate. He admits that that's a Stargate. So you've got the Masonic G on the inside cover. Then you open up the album Endgame, and on the inside, Dave Mustaine is wearing a double-headed eagle T-shirt. So just like... he thinks that we're so stupid that we don't see that. Like, you have a problem with occult imagery, yes, yet you're using it all over your stuff yourself. And then, you know, you want to talk about, I'm a Christian and I'm this and that and the other. But by the way, my mother was Jewish and she raised me as Jehovah's Witness. Now, right there, I go, wait a second. That's another instance where you think we're stupid. You just proved right there, to me at least, that you're a bloodline. The Dave Mustaine is a bloodline. Why? Because he said his mother was Jewish, but they grew up Jehovah's Witness. Well, everybody knows that the Levite tribe, one of the 12 tribes of Israel, that is a part of the Merovingian bloodline, their bloodline spawned Charles Taze Russell, who started the Watchtower Society of Jehovah's Witnesses. You had Joseph Smith started Mormonism, also of that Levite bloodline. So Jew, Mormon, Jesus Christ, Latter-day Saints, Jehovah's Witness, all the same bloodline there. All the same, they're set up, and those members are predominantly of the bloodline as well. So people, inadvertently to me, that's a great example. Dave Mustaine is why I brought that up. That's a great example of somebody who you can see right there, oh, I'm a Christian, blah, blah, blah. But yet, you can really see what side of the fence that they're playing on there. I think Dave Mustaine's a fabulous musician. I have nothing against him. Personally, I hope he doesn't hear this and want to come kill me or gut me like a fucking catfish like he said he was going to. He heard him tell this story one time about their drummer. His drummer, like, dropped his flying V, like, you know, with the pointy edges down, and it was some nice Jackson. It just split in two, and the headstock broke, and they said they had to lock him in a closet because he was going to gut their drummer like a fucking catfish with a broken bottle. The motherfucker's crazy. I think he's a great musician, and I hope I don't piss him off, but I'd love to interview him sometime. But nonetheless, that's a great example of people who really claim to be on one side of something, and then you can really tell if you really do some digging what side they're really on. So that's how that to me is the best way I can answer your question there on the Agenda 21 thing. Be mindful of the information, but try to come to your own conclusions on it. Be very careful of the people that are touting this stuff out. See, that's why I think that they allowed the Eric John Phelps, the Vatican assassin guy. I think that's why. You know, because he has a lot of legitimate information on the CMP and on the Jesuits, on the Knights of Malta, real legitimate, provable information. I can't think of anything off the top of my head I've ever found research-wise that I would disagree with the guy about. But then you hear him talk like on Red Ice or something, some of these interviews he's done, and he straight up talks about wanting to set up a segregated state, but black people in one state and white people in another state. I mean, he's just talking like a Nazi. Supposedly he's openly Zionist, tells people he's a Zionist. Works for an Israeli diamond company. So those kind of things, again, you know, they put a figurehead in charge of these specific issues, and it's always some figurehead that's easily discreditable for whatever reason, whether they're a Jew, whether, you know, they just talk madness. So there you go. I hope that answers your question there, listener. By the way, if you've got any more emails you want to send in tonight, globalrealityshow@gmail.com is where you can get those in at. Let's jump into some more news here. As Texas faced some of the worst wildfires in its history, a severe drought crisis that has caused the federal government to declare the entire state of Texas a disaster area, its governor was schmoozing with well-heeled conservative donors in Vail, Colorado, at a retreat organized by the right-wing industrialist Koch brothers. Governor Rick Perry and left his state without notifying constituents or the press and dodged inquiries into his whereabouts. The media had to resort to tracking the tail number of a plane owned by one of Perry's major campaign donors. This was an opportunity to talk about the economic success in Texas. So who knows? He may have been going to a CMP meeting there. He may have been going something where they were advising him about whether or not he's going to do his presidential run or not. Very well could be. I mean, have you ever seen that guy, the Koch brothers guy? I mean, if I ever seen a reptilian in my life, that's one. Look at that fucking guy. Let me draw a picture of this clown in the chat room. Look at this guy. I mean, that's one of those Koch brothers guys. Look at that fucking guy. I mean, these guys, ugh. So he's off, you know, having some secret meeting. Who knows what kind of meeting that was? We'll never know. Who knows what they were talking about? Oh, do you guys hear that they've completely dropped all the charges now? Prosecutors to drop all charges against ex-IMF chief Dominic Strauss-Kahn. I knew what this was from day one. From day one, I knew that they were setting him up. I was like, because Dominic Strauss-Kahn, while he's been at the IMF, at least for my research, has been holding back all of this globalist big bank financial crash stuff by basically stonewalling what the bankers have wanted him to do, almost as if they're trying to come up with a contingency plan. So I immediately was like, they're cooking this up. I knew they'd end up dropping the charges. This is, watch, guaranteed he'll be reinstated back to the IMF, and guaranteed as soon as he's reinstated and all the charges are dropped that this hooker had made against him, you're going to see this guy go head over heels. He's going to pin his fucking own feet back behind his ears and spread his cheeks open and just
take that big Satan cock.
I mean, guaranteed this guy buckles to every fucking big globalist bank thing they want to go through instantaneously. You're going to see cap and trade. You'll see all the carbon credit stuff go in where, you know, they give carbon credits to third world countries, if you know, amounts that they can't pay back. Then when they default and they can't pay those back, the IMF and the World Bank goes in and takes all of their land and basically just absorbs their country into the world power structure. You're going to see all this happening now. They had to scare him a little bit. They had to, you know, sometimes they do that. I think this is a clear case of that. You know, they put these guys in power, and these guys, sometimes they get drunk with power and they get arrogant and they think that they've gotten in these places all on their own accord. Oh, no, Bubba. Your name is Dominic Strauss-Kahn. Con, K, strong K sound, like Amaraka, the serpent, the snake. Okay, you weren't fooling me for a minute. The day when you stepped into the IMF, I think back 2007, 2008, I think it was when he took over. We covered it here on the show, day he went in. And I said, keep your eye on this guy. He's he's one of these Rothschild bloodline guys. He's going to be up to no good while he's in here. And it seems that, you know, he just kind of forgot who his masters were, and they had to remind him real quick. And now it seems he's gotten the message, and he's probably going to acquiesce to everything the global gangsters want him to do. There you go. And, we talked about, what was it, last year, I guess, 7 or 8 months ago, I can't remember, that they have been gradually decreasing the amount of fluoride in the water in the United States. And sometimes on some days you notice it, especially when it's hot outside. People are just going crazy. Well, apparently there was all kinds of madness across the United States on the 4th of July. I don't know whether they've upped the HAARP and lowered the fluoride. But mob shoots firework at police in Peoria, Illinois. 300-plus fine on the street corner in Mobile, Alabama. 13 stabbed and a bunch of other people shot in Boston in just 5 hours. Chicago, 5 dead, 23 hurt over the holiday weekend. I mean, 2 shot during massive brawl outside Atlantic City Casino. 4-year-old boy shot while watching Baltimore fireworks. Dozens of teens loot stores and then attack passerby. This all happened yesterday. And then, of course, what they trotted out today, this ridiculous OJ 2 staged murder trial, Casey Anthony horse shit that they got everybody into and everybody's talking about. They got all of America focusing on this horse shit, this divide and conquer fucking operation, OJ Part 2. Oh, OJ got off because he's rich and blah, 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 blah. Oh, she got off because she's white and she's a cracker and white people get away with murder. I mean, this is nothing but the furthering of this divide and conquer. So they are trying to enrage us. They are trying to pit white against black, every race against each other. They're raising the vitriol. They're raising the hate speak. They're raising it all. Anything they can do in humanity's brightest hour, the biggest and most crucial time for all of us alive on this planet right now to come together as a species, not be divided. And they are doing everything in their power, running every operation they can to divide us, divide and conquer. We're all in the same boat. We all have the same problem. It's them. You and I, we're not the problem. But as we discussed when we were reading William Bramley's book, The Gods of Eden, everything has been designed since the dawn of time to pit mankind against each other, to make it appear as if we are the problem, when no, it is these custodial bastards in charge. Well, I'll tell you what. You know what? You're so custodial. Why don't you go clean the fucking toilet? Scrub shit like you are designed to do, you motherfuckers. You ought to be the slaves. Call yourself custodians. You need to go in there and scrub the fucking toilet. David Rockefeller comes in and says, I don't think so. I'm not going to scrub a toilet, Smithers. You ever notice Mr. Burns and Smithers have the same voice? I mean, Mr. Burns and David Rockefeller have the same voice. It's true. Listen to interviews. Same dude. There's even an episode where Kissinger visits him. I shit you not. Man, we got some crazy fucking news here tonight. We've been going at this about 37 minutes, and I kind of need a breather and need to catch a drink. So let's take a break, come back, and when we get back from the break, we'll finish up with our news tonight. Hopefully, we'll get trying to get through as much of it as we can. And then we'll get into reading Bramley tonight. I mean, not Bramley, but reading Lost Book of Enki tonight. This is The Global Reality, folks. Stay with us.
Building walls, bells ring.
Oh, yeah. Back here with you on the Global Reality, right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. Thanks for being with us here tonight. Staying up and getting late into the moon batty hours with you here. We're going to get back into... getting back into our news. And we'll be reading from the Lost Book of Enki for you here tonight as well on the broadcast. My website where this broadcast originates from is www.theglobalreality.com. It's theglobalreality.com. Achieving Band, the donate button is up there, and that's where you can support our work. And please support our work if you can and help us push forward and be able to pay the bills and do all that stuff. So there you go. Please help us out. And very much looking forward to doing the interview with Red Eyes tomorrow. I think it's going to be good, and I'll let you guys know for sure when that's going to be up. I just don't know yet, but I'm sure they'll let me know sometime tomorrow. So I should be getting into that. Nick had a question in the chat room. Can you talk about the free trade zones of the Idaho Eagle Forum? Is claiming that Chinese will be using these zones as a city within a city. I think that's probably already going on. I mean, you know, I think it's probably been going on for quite some time. The China owns us. So, you know, the whole idea that earlier thing about rewilding America and all that stuff, I think ultimately from my research, that's what the plan is. The plan is to divide the United States of America up into little territories, and little countries, and each individual country, China, Russia. I mean, you've already had Russian billionaires buying up, you know, boatloads of property in the United States, buying up, you know, million-dollar houses. And see, they're making us, they're tanking our economy, and these guys are coming in and buying up, you know, the big properties for pennies on the dollar to them. This is what it's about. So, yeah, I mean, there very well could be some truth to that. I mean, it's coming from the Eagle Forum. Automatically, I'd be skeptical about it. But, I mean, you see that now. You see, I mean, everywhere, I don't know where all of you out there live in the United States, and I know many of our listeners live outside the United States, but if you live in the United States, depending on where you live, it's certainly that way here in Dallas where I live. You have certain areas of town and certain cities that are like, you know, not trying to be derogatory or anything, but it's like, you know, it's Little Asia. You know, that's basically what it is. It's one area, and, you know, there's certain shops there and certain stores and all the people in that. There's an area like that not too far from where I live, and there's, you know, everything there is, you know, it's kind of like that community. And, yeah, you definitely get the idea that a lot of free trade exists in there, and that there's certain rules that don't apply to normal trade and the rest of that stuff. I mean, look, I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's unbelievable what you can get in from China. I mean, they're so slack on the rules with China and stuff. I mean, that's what the goal is. So, you know, I haven't really looked into that, Nick. I can't really answer that question and say that it's true or isn't true. I will say this. It does. I think there is a bit of that that does ring true. And the idea of, you know, dividing the United States, that's what this whole phony thing of the phony secession of the United States of Texas from the United States, and seeing Rick Perry get behind it, see Alex Jones getting behind that idea, and making it appear that that is the people. You know, the whole secession thing in Texas, seceding from the Union, was supposed to be a stopgap or a, you know, an oh shit handle, a fire extinguisher, an emergency situation thing, an emergency situation clause, rather, for the people if the government was becoming too tyrannical. But see, what they're doing is they're using the Tea Partiers and the Truth Movement, the Patriot Movement, that whole thing, to make it appear that secession is for the people so they can basically break the United States up into a bunch of pieces and sell off the pieces to other countries, China, Russia, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and turn us into, you know, they want to make the world smaller. You know, that way, you know, an area of China is just in another state, not a thousand ways away. That way they can bring more war and more terror into more places in the United States by breaking us up into a smaller block, in different blocks. That's the whole plan. And that's how, you know, Rick Perry and Alex Jones both are singing from the same songbook and playing for the same team, because only somebody who was operating for the New World Order, trying to get the New World Order brought in, would tout this whole idea of phony secession. So there you go. We got a ton of news, man. I want to get through as much of this as I can tonight. There's a shit ton of it. Five Civil War reenactors struck by lightning all at the same time. Wow, that's a bit odd. Doesn't sound natural to me. I've talked about rare earth metals. I've told everybody out there, man, if you want to, I'm not a stockbroker. I'm not somebody that, you know, I wish I had money to invest in stuff. God damn, I'd make some cash. I would, because I can tell you stuff. I mean, dude, I've been telling you guys for a while now, rare earths. You want to find some place to put your money in, invest in rare earths, man. You can, I mean, if you had put $200 in rare earths 3 months ago, you'd be sitting on $3,000 right now. $200, that's not a lot. Imagine if you put up $2,000, $3,000, $5,000, or a couple hundred, $200, $300 right now, you might be, you know, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 two or three months from now. Listen to this, more to back up me telling you that. I've been researching this for a while. I'm telling you, rare earth is where it's at. That's the whole thing right now. And if you get in on this early, because these guys are neutered without this stuff. And China's had the stranglehold on it for a while, but they're opening up new mines down in the United States, which is going to bring more jobs. It's also going to bring up the demand. The demand's already high for this stuff. But if you invest in some of these new mines that are reopening in the United States now, and you get on that now, you stand to make a windfall of serious cash over the next 2 to 3 years. Next few months, even. But here's another, this is from the AFP, another thing to back up my statement about that. Chinese monopoly over rare earth metals could be challenged by the discovery of massive deposits of these high-tech minerals in mud on the Pacific floor. A study on Sunday suggests China accounts for 97% of the world's production of 17 rare earth elements that are essential for electric cars, flat-screen TVs, iPods, superconducting magnets, lasers, missiles, night vision goggles, wind turbines, and many other advanced products. These elements carry exotic names such as neodymium, promethium, and yttrium, but despite of their rare earth tag, are in fact abundant in the planet's crust. The problem, though, is that land deposits of them are thin and scattered around, so sites which are commercially exploitable are not subject to tough environment restrictions. As a result, the 17 elements have been dubbed the 21st century gold for their rarity and value. Production of them is almost entirely centered on China, which also has a third of the world's reserves. Another third is held by this former Soviet Republic, the United States, and Australia. But a new study published in the journal Nature Geoscience points to an extraordinary concentration of rare earth elements in thick mud at great depths on the Pacific floor. Japanese geologists suggested or studied samples of 78 sites covering a major portion of the center eastern Pacific between 120 and 180 degrees longitude. Drills extracted sedimentary cores to depths that were in place more than 165 feet below the seabed. More than 2,000 of these cores were chemically tested with content in rare earth elements. So they can't build their machines. They can't build their computers without this stuff. So this is an opportunity not only for us to realize something that's very valuable to them. There are probably people out there that are sitting on land that has this stuff on it, and they don't even know it. And, you know, they're probably going to get offered large sums of money. This is something that, if you know, could be an Achilles heel. If you've got a land out there with a ton of this stuff, man, and you can set up your own mining company to pull this stuff out of the ground, you know, you could short these bastards out. Just flood the market with it, make it worth nothing, and they'd be out of business. But anyway, there you go. More of that being, you know, touted out into the public. Egyptian and French archaeologists have unearthed a 2,700-year-old stone gate belonging to the Nubian king Shabaka while digging near Luxor's Karnak Temple. The mystery of antiquity said on Sunday. I love this. Zahi Hawass is just lying. So much more stuff to come out now. After he's been threatened with arrest and all this stuff, you know, knows how this works. There's going to be some really big revelations coming soon. Oh, I wanted to mention something. One of our listeners sent in. I forgot about this. One of my listeners, I haven't seen this movie yet. I'm waiting to go see it at the theater. And yeah, I know what it is. I know it's probably going to blow, but I liked the other two, you know, for what they were. And I'd like to see this one in 3D, but I haven't seen the new Transformers movie yet. In fact, I haven't seen any of the new summer movies yet. There's a bunch I'd like to see, but, somebody sent me an email saying that they watched the new Transformers movie, and there's a scene where they're blowing up, and they sent me a screenshot of this, and it is indeed there. Crystal clear it's there. They said they were watching this new Transformers movie, and they noticed when there was a scene where they were blowing up buildings in Chicago, and during one of the scenes, there's two Twin Towers sitting there. Look, just like the Twin Towers in the World Trade Center, there's explosions going off in the bottom, and it's right by the water, and it looks... You know, just like New York on 9/11, they went and checked the skyline. There, of course, there's no buildings there like those. But I've got the picture right in front of me. I don't have a way to put it in the chat room for you to see it right now, but I'll try to do that soon. But I have it right here, and yeah, you're right, listener. I mean, there's two towers there, and there's an explosion at the bottom of the water. It looks like it's pulled right out of video footage of 9/11. See, they're subliminally putting that in there. That's trauma-based mind control. They slip that in there, you know, an image of the Twin Towers in there and explosions in there. And what that does is it recalls the trauma that has occurred in people from the images of seeing the Twin Towers being blown up, and they were blown up, and you're a fucking fool if you think they weren't. And so they're milking that trauma-based reaction to make your reaction to what you're seeing on screen more emphasized, and basically probably trying to trick you into thinking that Michael Bay's piece of shit is not a piece of shit when it probably is. Very sneaky, though, bastards. But thank you, listener, for pointing that out. We talked about last week jellyfish shutting down these nuclear plants. Seemingly they're having that problem in Israel now. Swarms of jellyfish threatened to shut down the Orat Rabin nuclear power plant in Hadera, Israel. The jellyfish are blocking the plant's power water supply. Again, there's been all this talk about extraterrestrials affecting nuclear power plants around the world. I said it last week when we first talked about this. It's happened again. That was in Scotland last week. Now it's happened in Israel. There's video of this and everything. I mean, this very well could be caused from some outside source. This could very well be caused by some, you know, extraterrestrial source making these jellyfish attack our nuclear plants. I don't know. Anything's possible at this point. Let's see what else we have. Some of this stuff, I'm moving fast. Here we go. Daily Mail article. Mind-reading scientists predict what a person is going to do before they do it. It's been a dream of both scientists and law enforcement officials alike. Researchers monitoring brain activity can now determine what action a person is planning before he carries it out. Although it is currently only possible to know what someone is going to do just moments before it happens, the implications of the breakthrough are huge. Police, for example, would love to know what a criminal is intending to do during a tense armed standoff. Lead researcher Jason Gallivan of the University of Western Ontario, this is a considerable step forward in our understanding of how the human brain works. Well, that's not what concerns me here. Again, you know, you always have to look at not what they're telling you, but what they are not telling you. And what they are not telling us here, and you're a fool if you think this wouldn't happen, is that this gives them the open door and open license to say, well, now that we, you know, they can just skew the data. They can make that machine spit out whatever they want it to spit out on cue. And they can make it benefit their story of how events took place. For example, they could shoot somebody preemptively during a standoff, kill them, and then make the machine spit out there, well, see, according to our machine here, he was about to raise his gun and fire at us, so we shot him and we're in the right. But how do we know that that machine isn't lying? How do we know it's not programmed to give that answer, to give that response? See, they're not telling us that here in this article. So again, more next level, you know, Orwellian, what's his name? Dick. Oh, dude, it's just out of control. And if that's not good enough for you, listen to this. Let me find it. Oh, where did you go? No, I can't find it. Oh, here we go. Artificially intelligent machines that can argue back with humans are just years away. Now, again, you know, Kurtz, one of these guys have been lying to us. Oh, yeah, we're not going to have the singularity until 2035. Blah, blah, blah. I've been telling people for years it's going to be 2015, 2016. It's going to be here by then. And now every day they're starting to come out with more stuff. Well, yeah, it may be here before then. Yeah, it's, believe me, you and I are going to see the war of the machines in our lifetime. It's a fact. I hate to have to be the one to admit that, but it's the truth. Technology is exponentiating right now faster than any one of us can comprehend. If you go to the store right now and spend the most amount of money you can spend on a brand new computer, by the time you walk out to your car and put it in your car and get in the car and drive home, they've got systems being ready to ship out to the stores that are 100 times more powerful than what you just took home. It's a fact. It's a standard scenario across the world. The computer crashes and we scream exactly what we think at the flickering screen. But we may soon have to learn to bite our tongue or risk the wrath of being shouted at by the machine we've just cursed. That is because scientists are building a voice-activated device that can interact with people in a natural and intelligent way. Artificial intelligence will help it become familiar with a user's voice with the ultimate goal that it can understand, speak, and behave like a human. That's just what I want to do, is talk to something that doesn't have a soul. I'm really into that. I want to do that. I'll go to a fucking bar. Jesus. The five-year, $6.2 million project is still in its infancy, but researchers from the University of Edinburgh, Cambridge, and Sheffield believe the technology will have many benefits. It could improve voice-activated computers, develop web search engines. Oh, yeah. Always quick to tell us the great things this technology can do. Then everyone will talk about the deep, dark, sinister things. You can, oh, yeah, you're just into science fiction. No. Anything these fuckers allow to come out is designed to have a nefarious use. They can church it up and sugar it up and dress it up, put perfume on the pig all day long, but we know what their real intention behind all this stuff is. That's why we have to re-own it. We have to reclaim that. We have to use this technology. That's why using technology for what we use it for music or movies or films or radio shows, that's a great use for it. Because hopefully we can try to get the message out that we need to re-own this technology before it owns us. We may be too far past the point of that right now. I hate to say it. This was published out of the Malta Independent Online on July 3rd, the day before yesterday, the 4th of July. And just admitting it now, these guys are so arrogant. It's funny. You know, if you'd have told somebody this a couple of years ago, if I'd have told somebody, I did tell people this kind of stuff a couple of years ago. You know, people would cuss me out, call me a motherfucker and everything else. But listen to this. This is out of Malta, right out of the horse's mouth. Tomorrow, the 4th of July, the United States of America marks Independence Day. But few here in Malta are perhaps aware of the fact that the Knights of the Order of St. John and a number of Maltese had played a concerted role in the American Revolutionary War on the American side of the equation. Excuse me? That's great. That's a great admission. Thank you. Thank you for admitting what I personally have known for about 4 years, fucking years now, since I got into researching all this CMP stuff. Completely ripped me and everything I believed in apart in 7 ways to Sunday, thank goodness. I'm grateful for it, but the Knights of the Order of St. John and a number of Maltese had played a concerted role in the American Revolutionary War on the American side of the equation. And you wonder why all these flag waving or these crazy, I'm a patriot, I'm American, I'm Ron Paul supporter, I'm John Birch's side, derp, 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 I'm a Christian. Now do you understand why I've been telling you for almost 4 years now why you need to be concerned about people like Alex Jones and all these others and Stan Montiel, these guys having connections with the Knights of Malta and the Jesuits? And these guys have been on the side of the two phony sides for years and years. Again, that's what I explained earlier. They always have the crazy side so that the other side comes out the victor. You got to have one loser and one winner in these fake, phony, divide-and-conquer wars. But just a huge admission there. Oh, yeah, we were totally behind the Revolutionary War. I thought everybody knew that. Yeah, of course the Knights of Malta were behind that. Why do you think it was one nation under God, monotheistic? I should explain it to you right there. Ernest Hemingway driven to suicide over FBI surveillance. This is interesting information. I never heard about this. A.E. Hotchner said he believed that the FBI's monitoring of Nobel Prize-winning author over suspicions of his links to Cuba, Ernest Hemingway, substantially contributed to his anguish in his suicide 50 years ago. Hotchner wrote in the New York Times that he had regretfully misjudged his friend's fears of federal investigators, which were dismissed as paranoid delusions for years after his death. In 1983, The FBI released a 127-page file kept on Hemingway since the 1940s. That's unbelievable. Confirming he was watched by agents working for J. Edgar Hoover, who took personal interest in his case. So, Ernest Hemingway had heard he was being, it was under surveillance for his beliefs in the United States of America. I mean, you know, you gotta believe that let the wind out of his sails. Here's Ernest Hemingway, you know, who in many people's eyes represents a chunk of Americana and what America's produced and what it's about. And he's under surveillance from the country he loves for his political beliefs. And then all his friends tell them that he's paranoid and delusional and that it's not really going on and it's all in his head. And so he kills himself. And then we find out years later that one of the greatest writers of all time killed himself because he allowed his friends to convince him that he was paranoid and delusional when he was right on. And now the FBI admits to it that they were monitoring him. So, you know, I mean, there's a lesson in this from Ernest Hemingway. And the lesson is that, you know, don't let anybody tell you what the truth is. Come to your own truth. And don't stray from that. I mean, that's just an unbelievable story to me. There's a song in there somewhere. Somebody should write a song about that. You know? I can't believe nobody has yet. There's a song there. I mean, Ernest Hemingway kills himself because he believed the FBI was keeping tabs on him because of his beliefs in the United States of America, where we're supposed to be free and have any beliefs you want. But no, that's not the case. Hasn't been for quite a while. He kills himself because everybody tells him he's paranoid, and it turns out he's right. See? So those of us out here, the Discordians, the ones who have been, you know, trying to nudge people and say, hey, you know, this world is not what you think it is. Maybe you need to wake up and start looking at this. Turns out that we've been right for a lot longer than we probably give ourselves credit for. They are encouraging men and women in India to volunteer for sterilization and in return are offering a car and other prizes for those who come forward. And this is some sick eugenics fucking shit right here. Among the awards on offer is the Indian-made Tata Nano, the world's cheapest car. So they're not only are they giving them a free car, they're giving the world's cheapest car in exchange for getting sterilized. They're not giving them a Ferrari or, you know, a Charger or something. No, they're giving them the cheapest piece of crap, little two-door box of fucking rocks with probably a two-banger. It's probably got a fucking golf cart engine in it. In exchange for being sterilized. This is sick stuff, man. And you know, that's the goddamned thing about it, isn't it? Because on the one hand, you see, yeah, you see, we are overpopulated, but you think about the ways that we concoct to deal with it, and they're just not so nice. Well, this just goes to show you, you know, if you want people to, you want to create eugenics and you want to kill people off, offer them cash and prizes. You know, didn't Bill Hicks talk about that? Didn't George Carlin talk about that? Have you just lined people up in a stadium and tell them you'll give them some cash and prizes and you'll give them a trip to Hawaii? People will line up in stadiums to be eaten by lions and beheaded and blown, have their heads blown. Oh, you're going to give us a trip to Hawaii? Yay. I'll die on TV. Cool. You know, like these fuckers turning in their guns on Valentine's Day for a dozen roses. Turn in your guns and get a dozen roses for your sweetheart. Or at Christmas, come down and get a $100 gift certificate at Best Buy for trading in your guns. And some guy in the newspaper says, oh, I traded in 12 guns. I got my 12 gift certificates for Best Buy. Well, get me a bunch of shit. It's going to be outdated by next Christmas. Mm-hmm. Those guns won't be outdated. No, guns increase in value. They're one of the best investments you can make is a gun. Guns, one of the few things that you buy that will always appreciate in value. Oh, it's sick stuff. Well, we're going to take a break, come back, and get into reading the Lost Book of Enki for you here tonight on the show. Pick up where we left off last time. It's a good and very interesting read. Hopefully, it won't be as pornographic tonight. Well, that was wild. Last week, I was like, damn, this shit is getting heavy. Anyway, this is the Global Reality, folks. Stay with us. Oh, yeah. Back here with you on the Global Reality right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. Thanks for being with us here tonight. Thanks for staying up late with us for another late night edition of the broadcast. We're going to be getting into Lost Book of Enki here in this segment of the show tonight. It's been a good time reading that book so far. I always enjoy reading books with you here on the show. I got to go back, and this always happens. I don't know what it is. I won't touch this PDF at all, and it'll just automatically scroll to another page once. But I've got back to where we had left off last time. Now, where we're getting into now is the account of the mutiny of the Agigi. And as we've established in our previous readings, the Agigi is the name for the people that were brought to Nibiru, to Earth from Nibiru, and were put in charge of mining the gold, and essentially started to revolt because they felt that the labor was too heavy and they couldn't get all the gold mined. So allegedly, this is why the Anunnaki created mankind as a slave race to mine the gold for them. So that's what we're going to be getting into now, is this mutiny of the Agigi and these workers basically saying, you know, we're tired of this, no more. Now this is the account of the mutiny of the Agigi and how Anzu was put to death for stealing the Tablets of Destiny and was punished. From the Abzu, gold from Earth's veins was carried to the landing place. And they transported them in rocket ships to the way station on Lamu, which, of course, we have established Lamu as being Mars. So right there, they sent rocket ships. And this is a 5,000-year-old text openly talking about rocket ships being sent to the way station, also on the 33rd degree parallel, from the transport station on the 33rd degree parallel in Cydonia on Earth, which is what we know as modern-day Mesopotamia, modern-day Iraq. From the planet Mars, the celestial chariots brought the precious metal gold to Nibiru. On Nibiru, the gold was fashioned into the finest dust, and it was employed to protect the atmosphere. Slowly, the breach in the heavens was healing. Slowly, Nibiru was saved. In the Eden, and here, of course, Eden is E-D-I-N, but we know it to be the same thing as what we know in biblical text as Eden, E-D-E-N. It's the origination. Again, it's just, but just puts holes in modern-day Christianity left and right here. In the Eden, the five cities were perfected. Enki Eneridu, a sparkling abode made upon the soil and raised it skyward. So he built a large house that was basically a skyscraper. Like the ziggurats at Ur is what I believe those to be. You ever seen the ziggurats at Ur? That's essentially what that is. Like a mountain, he raised it above the ground and built it in a good place. Damkina, his spouse, dwelt there, and he taught his son Marduk. Enki taught his son Marduk wisdom there. In Nibiru Ki, in Lil, the bond heaven-earth established, a sign it was to see. So he's talking about establishing, in Lil was basically the one in charge of establishing this link with heaven and earth, and establishing Nibiru as heaven, and what we're told heaven is, heaven being Nibiru is what they claim here, or what they claim in these texts. At its center, a heavenward tall pillar was reaching the sky itself. On a platform that cannot be overturned, it was placed. There, with the words of Enlil, all settlements encompassed on Lamu and in Nibiru, they were heard. For their beams were raised, the heart of all the lands they could search. So they're talking about a beam that they can shoot on across great distances on any planet and tell if there's life there. Its eyes could scan all the lands, its net unwanted approach impossible made. In its lofty house, a crown-like chamber was the center. To the distant heavens, it peered. This is like setting up the Watchers. This is where the term the Watchers came up. They had a beam that could look over everything and a tower that was up and into the heavens. So this is where the biblical term the Watchers came from. This is why they were called that. They had a beam. They could scan across the sky. And they could scan every living thing with it. So this is where the idea that of the all-knowing God came from. It's not an all-knowing God. It's a technology that enables the user to be virtually an all-knowing God. You see? This is where all the mythologies of religion are held within these texts, if we're brave enough to look at them and not just dismiss them as, you know, the ramblings of the crazy CIA agent Zachariah Sitchin. You know, again, as I talked about earlier, associating real truths with people who are easy to discredit, so then you attempt to use cognitive dissonance to try and negate the information. That's what Zachariah Sitchin, another case of that. Towards the heavens, what a horizon was its gaze. The heavenly zenith was perfected. In its dark, hallowed chamber, 12 emblems was the family of the sun marked. Now that's interesting. 12 emblems. 12 tribes of Israel that allegedly correspond with 12 extraterrestrial races, which can then be communicated using the 12 jewels and the 12 stones of the ephod. Starting to see the pattern here. Ephod being, you know, highly regarded in religious practice, Kabbalistic practices, it's extraterrestrial technology. On Emmys were the secret formulas of the sun and the moon, Nibiru and Earth, and 8 celestial gods recorded. The tablets of destinies in the chamber their hues emitted. With them in Lil saw all comings and all goings on. So Enlil was the one that was put in charge of this all-seeing technology, the real all-seeing eye. That's what the real all-seeing eye represents. The all-seeing eye of Enlil. Representing his, that's why you saw the government group, Total Information Awareness. That's why they use that. The eye in the sky. You've heard that song, right? I am the eye in the sky. Looking at you, I can read your mind. There you go. By Earth's quick orbit, they were disturbed. Of the elixir, they had only small rations. See, yeah, that's another thing. These Anunnaki started noticing that when they came to Earth, because our orbit is so quick, they age a lot quicker. Which goes to explain why the elite are wanting these portals and stuff to open. Because allegedly they can't break free of the Earth because of the etherical barrier, the Van Allen radiation belts that's placed around our Earth, which won't permit humans to break free from it without massive exposure to radiation. So building these stargates and these different things where they can jump from one planet to another very easily is very important to the elite. Because they want to be able to jump to another planet that has a different orbit and thus slow down their aging cycles. That's undoubtedly what they've been doing. This, of course, this technology goes back. It's admitted that the Anunnaki had this technology. Hell, they admit that they had the technology to shear off the tops of the mountains down there where the Nazca lines are in Peru, to carve the lion, half man, half lion helmet face on Mars that we talked about earlier here. They talked about another device that would bring back a dead man to life. In the Eden, the Anunnaki toiled. In the Abzu, the work was more backbreaking. By teams, the Anunnaki were sent back to Nibiru, and new teams were arriving on Earth. The Igigi on the Lamu dwelling were the loudest in complaining. So it was the ones that were on Mars, essentially, I guess, that were complaining the most. When from Lamu to Earth they descend, they were demanding a rest place on Earth. With Anu, Didin, Lil, and Enki exchange words, and then they consulted the king. Let the leader come to Earth and with Anzu have discussions, so Anu did say to them. Anzu to Earth from the heavens descended the words of complaints to Enlil and Enki he delivered. Let Anzu of the workings gain understanding. Enki to Enlil was saying, I will the Abzu show him and reveal to him the bond of heaven and earth. To the words of Enki, Enlil consented. Enki to Anzu, the Abzu did show the toil in the mines to him he presented. Enlil invited Anzu to Nibiru, and it let him enter the hallowed dark chamber. In the innermost sanctuary of the Tablets of Destiny, to Anzu he explained. What the Anunnaki were doing in the five cities was explained and shown to Anzu. To the Igigi who at the landing place were arriving, he promised relief. To discuss the complaints of the Igigi, he then returned to Nibiru. A prince among the princes was Anzu, of royal seed his ancestry could be counted. Evil thoughts filled his heart when to the bond of heaven and earth he returned. He was scheming to take away the Tablets of Destiny. In his heart, he was planning to take control of the decrees, D-E-C-R-E-E-S. In his heart, he was planning to take control of the decrees of heaven and earth. The removal of the Enlilship in his heart, he conceived to rule the Igigi and to rule the Anunnaki. That was his aim. Unsuspecting Enlil at the entrance to the sanctuary, Anzu stationed himself there. Unsuspecting Enlil left the sanctuary for a cooling swim, he went away. With the purpose of evil, Anzu seized the Tablets of Destiny. In a sky chamber, he flew away to the mountain of the sky chambers and went there swiftly. There in the landing place, rebellious Igigi were waiting for him. They were preparing to declare Anzu the king of Earth and Mars. In the sanctuary of Nibiru, the brilliance petered out, the humming quieted down. Silence prevailed in the place. Suspended were the sacred formulas. In Nibiru, Enlil was speechless. He was overwhelmed by the treachery. To Enki, he spoke angry words of the ancestry of Anu to him. He questioned, you know, hey, this isn't our blood doing this, is this? Somebody that's related to us wouldn't do this kind of fucking shit, would they? Is it one of our bloodlines? We're going to have to kill this motherfucker. In Nibiru, the leaders gathered. The Anunnaki who decree fates with Anu were consulting. Anzu must be seized. The tablets to the sanctuary must be returned. Thus did decree Anu. Who shall face the rebel? Who shall retrieve the tablets? The leaders asked each other. With the Tablets of Destiny in his possession, Anzu is invincible. They were saying to each other. Ninurta, by his mother, encouraged from the assembled, and he stepped forward. Enlil's warrior I shall be. Anzu I shall vanquish, Ninurta was saying. That's pretty badass. The woman stepped up. One of the guys, you know what I'm saying? One of the women steps up and says, I'll kill this motherfucker. Fuck it, let's go, let's ride, you know? Wasn't a dude. No. This is the woman that steps up. Let's ride. Let's go fuck this dude up. Come on, let's go do a kick door on this mother. Let's fuck this dude up. I'm ready. I'm the chick. Let's go. Yeah, dudes biting off cocks. I guess the women got to step up and, you know, control some stuff here. To the mountainside, Ninurta said, I'm sorry. I guess Ninurta is a female. So Ninurta set his course. I thought they said Ninurta was a female. I must be getting confused here. Okay, apparently Ninurta is a male, so I take that back. to the mountainside, Ninurta set his course to vanquish the fugitive Anzu he undertook. Ninurta was mocking Anzu from his hideout. You motherfucker, you suck. I'm coming to get the tablets, bitch. You know, mocking him. The tablets are my protection. I am invincible. Ninurta directed lightning darts at Anzu. But the arrows could not approach Anzu. They turned backwards and fired back away towards him. The battle was still. Ninurta's weapons, Anzu did not vanquish. Enki then to Ninurta gave counsel. With your whirlwind, stir up a storm. Let the dust cover Anzu's face. Let the wings of his skybird ruffle. So this is Oh, the ruffle the wings of his skybird. And again, they're using the terminology of a skybird as a ship. This is a space battle. And they're using weather warfare weapons and changing the weather and, you know, basically exploiting the territory of Earth as their weapon. Sound familiar? Huh. Wonder where these guys in charge got it from. Oh, here you go. For his son Enlil, he fashioned a mighty weapon. It was called a Tilu missile. To your stormer weapon, attach it. When wing to wing near an Anzu, shoot it. Thus did Enlil his son Ninurta instruct. When wing to wing were near each other, he let the missile fly as fast as lightning. Again, Ninurta in his whirlwind soared, and Anzu against him in his skybird rose to the challenge. Wing to wing, Anzu in anger shouted, this battle will be your destruction. Ninurta followed the advice of Enki, and with his whirlwind, he created a dust storm. The dust covered Anzu's face, and the pinions of his skybird were exposed. Into their midst, Ninurta let the missile fly loose, a fiery brilliance of Anzu's pinions engulfed. Like butterflies, his wings began to flutter to the ground. Anzu came falling. The earth shook. The skies became darkened. Well, why do you think that is? He shot a nuclear weapon at his ass. The fallen Anzu Ninurta made captive, and he retrieved the Tablets of Destiny from him. From the mountaintop, the Igigi were watching. When Ninurta came to the landing place, they trembled and kissed his feet. Ninurta, the captive Abigail and Anunnaki, he set free. To Anu and Enlil, his victory, he announced. He then returned to Nibiru, and in its innermost chamber, he reinstalled the tablets. Once again, the brilliance therein returned. The hum of MEs in the tablet were restored. I don't know what this MEs is. This hum of something of MEs. And figure out what that is, ME. Anybody out there knows, send me an email. Before the seven who judge Anzu, a judgment was taken. Enlil and Ninlil, his spouse, Enki and his spouse Ninki, the one beforehand as Demkina was known. The sons of Ninar and Marduk were there. Ninma was also in the judging. Ninurta spoke of the evil deeds that there were no justification for. Let death be the penalty, he said. The Agigi were right by complaining. A rest place on earth they do need. Marduk encounter argued by his evil deed. All the Anunnaki and Agigi and Anzu did endanger, Enlil said. Enki and Ninma with Enlil agreed. The evil must be extinguished, they said. To death by execution, the seven judged Anzu. With a killing ray, a laser beam, Anzu's life was extinguished. Let his body to the vultures be left, Ninurta said. Let him be buried on Lamu, Mars. In the cave next to Alalu, let him be laid to rest, Enki was saying. From the same ancestral seed, the two of them were. Let Marduk the body to Lamu carry. Let Marduk there as commander stay. So was Enki to the judges suggesting. Let it so be, Enlil said. Now, and so that's it. There you go. So they judged him and they buried him there on Mars where the other one was left. So that's the end of that. And wow, more interesting stuff there. And again, this whole idea and why we're reading this, this whole thing about this Lost Book of Enki, what it's supposed to be, for those of you who may have just been tuning in and just now hearing me read this, what's so fascinating about it is that it's a pre-history. It gets into the whole history of the bloodline and the genealogy of the people who came from wherever, Nibiru allegedly, to Earth and created mankind. And supposedly what is what we see now, the reason for this, why this has been kept away from us, and why Enki felt that mankind needed to know this information, and so that we could truly know who we are, where we came from, and all the basis for all these phony religions and all religions of the world are based on the restriction of this knowledge. So I'm glad that we're reading this and getting into this on air. It really is a good read. And we will start reading next time on the next part here. May or may not be a live show tomorrow. I don't really know for sure yet. We're going to have to see. It's my birthday, so I may not be doing a show tomorrow. I got to do 2 hours of red ice, but we'll see what happens. Either way, you guys have a great one. I want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight. My website is www.theglobalreality.com. Thanks to everybody out there sending me birthday wishes. If you want to make a donation with the chipping banner or the donate button there, want to send me a birthday gift or something, anything like that, anything would be greatly appreciated right now. We always need support. And after just paying the bills, we're kind of short for the month. So thank you so much, everybody out there. My name is Josh Reeves. I love each and every one of you. We'll see you next time for the broadcast. You guys have a great night. Take care.